We're on the road to Canton. Getting you ready for Andre Johnson's Hall of Fame induction on Saturday. Here's In the Loop.
So I was wrong about a few things from this game.
Just a few?
I was wrong about a few things.
Me? I was speaking for me.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's part of
it's a long list.
Part of what we do for a living, for 20 hours a week or whatever it is. You're going to be wrong about a few things, but there are a few things that I was wrong about after watching this Texans' first preseason game that I want to discuss with you, Lopez. Mm-hmm. You too, Chris Santiago, want to get y'all's thoughts on this. 713-572-4610 is the number to get in. You can text us. You can also get involved with the YouTube and the Twitch chats. The first thing for me, and we have not addressed this really in depth yet. We just kind of had a quick mention of it in the first segment. But the wide receiving pecking order. Mm-hmm. The pecking order at wide receiver, I was just flat out wrong about. I thought that John Metchie, not a lock to make the team. I thought there were only four locks to make the team in the wide receiver room, and none of those guys played last night. I thought everybody else that played last night is not a lock, but they're competing for those final spots. But I did have an idea, or at least thought I had an idea, for what the pecking order looked like. And I thought John Metchie was higher on it than I realized. And I got to give Clint Sterner some credit for this because he mentioned it before. My guy Cody Stoops has mentioned it as well. John Metchie is far from a lot to make this team. And the wide receiving pecking order, watching Xavier Hutchinson and Ben Skowronek both look like more viable candidates to make this team, to be the wide receivers number 5 and 6 on this team. And that's based on ability and how they were used, how they were targeted. The fact that Xavier Hutchinson was the first guy to be targeted and the first read on that play. Even the touchdown play to Tegan Quatoriano, it's Davis Mills finding him on the next read, right? The first read, go back and look at that play, is Xavier Hutchinson in the back of the end zone. He's just not open.
Yeah.
So, like, that tells me a lot of how they viewed this game, how they viewed the pecking order of the wide receivers, and I think I was wrong about it.
I'll tell you straight up, I did think he was a lock to make the team. Now, we understand that it was a huge competition. We've been talking about
he was my he was the I had him in as a favorite leader in the clubhouse for sure.
But just watching him, the way other receivers talk about him, the way quarterbacks talk about him, this training camp, how he's been in that inner circle, and I know maybe you're reading too much into that, but you know, like he's a CJ Stroud guy. Like he, they are tight. And the fact that he's now another year removed, it was a terrific interview that we had with him, this week, last week, talking about how different things are a year removed from the year after his cancer treatment. I did think he was a lock. So add that to the list of things that I've been wrong about. But here's where it gets like really, really interesting. More than one guy, when this gets cut down to a 53-man roster, is going to have a really bad day because there's some really good players on this team that just ain't going to make the team at the wide receiver position.
Yeah, well, and I know Sean Pendergast has talked about this a lot in the morning. Like, one of the cool aspects of this team is the fact that they're going to have to
– Yeah.
They have graduated from, hey, we're desperately trying to find good players, to how many of these good players can we keep?
Yeah.
You know, like, think of how far we've come from, like, 3 years ago when they're trading for Anthony Miller with the Bears, like, as their slot receiver. And we're like, Anthony Miller.
Those were the days, weren't they?
Anthony Miller and Kiki QT.
Yeah.
Slot receiver competition. And it's like, what are we doing? What world do we live in? Now it's a conversation of, does our second-round pick, a wide receiver who was a second-round pick and played at Alabama, was a baller in college, obviously has been through some things. Is he good enough to make a team that now has a lot of good players on it? Noah Brown is the fourth best wide receiver. Robert Woods might be the fifth or sixth, or might not make the team. Ben Skowronek is like an underrated name and somebody who flashes. Xavier Hutchinson is here now and trying to make a name for himself. Like, it's just a different... It is a different state of affairs, a different place to be in for the Texans.
It's going to be fascinating to watch. And, yeah, a lot of people were wrong on that. Now, maybe things change. But the interesting thing, and I've been saying this, I said it the day that they acquired him, and this might be sort of like an X factor. There was a reason they brought in Ben Skowronek. There was a reason they did that.
Yeah, they traded for him.
Yeah, they traded for him. And I think we're kind of maybe seeing that reason. He can be an asset. He was getting open. He made some plays.
Yes.
Had that
ball thrown behind him where he had to reach behind him and make a really incredible athletic grab just to haul that in.
And he's a special teams guy. So it's almost like
a do-it-all guy.
A do-it-all guy. He can play in the backfield some. So, I mean, Ben Skowronek might be the guy along with Steven Sims, but because of what they do on special teams, some of these other guys, like perhaps Mechie, like perhaps Robert Woods, you know, might be on the outside looking in. Robert Woods has not been, he's not distinguished himself. He's had a couple of moments here and there, but they all do. But he hasn't distinguished himself in camp. And then that leads to Xavier Hutchinson.
Yeah.
Xavier Hutchinson looked like a dude.
Yeah, man. Well, for one thing, they revere Robert Woods. I could just see that being one where they keep him and we just don't fully understand
hell or
it.
Hell high water.
Because we're not there.
Yeah.
Like, it's almost like you got to be there to really understand the reasons in which they keep him around. But to your point about Xavier Hutchinson, the thing that I was wrong about, I thought that John Mechie would be in this game wide receiver number one, the guy that would be featured, the guy that would start, and I couldn't have been more wrong. That guy was 100% Xavier Hutchinson, and something to watch out for. Like, we got more preseason to go, and those are guys that I would figure should play, as long as they're healthy, should play every preseason game. They're auditioning until the very end. But after one, advantage clearly Xavier Hutchinson, and it surprised me a little bit.
Yeah, and one
catch for 4 yards.
Yeah, I'm sure
for John Mechie.
Exactly, I'm sure more people are thinking this from the 8-3-2. You guys, it's just one game, and you're talking about Mechie as if this were the third preseason game.
Okay, well, we haven't gotten to the third preseason game, my guy.
Yes.
Like, what do you want us to react to a game that hasn't happened yet?
Well, not only that,
what are we doing?
That's one aspect of it. This is all we have to go by.
Yeah,
and secondly, this was like the best opportunity for him to be. There was going to be a wide receiver one last night, no matter who was on the field.
Let's pack up our stuff. Hey, look, hey, Lopez, Santiago, we're off until after the third preseason game, all right?
Hey,
let's not have any opinions about anything until then. Are we good with that?
Yes. So
that's
the first part. That's all we have to go by right now. But I think the more important thing is this. No matter who was playing on the field last night, there was going to be a wide receiver that separated themselves from the others. And it wasn't John Mechie.
Yeah.
It was Xavier Hutchinson, one. Ben Skowronek, two.
And to that texter's point,
I
hate to be dismissive of that, because you are right. This could change from week to week.
Yeah.
Like, it could be a different story after their next preseason game and after the one after that. So it is not a done deal or, like, put a stamp on it. But going into this game, this one particular game, I thought John Mechie would be more heavily featured, would have more targets, would be more productive, and he was not. That surprised me. I was clearly wrong about that, because I said right here on the radio, it's going to be a Mechie day. Mm-hmm. You know, like, Mechie's going to be the number one receiver.
Mm-hmm.
He was not. He obviously was not. Another thing that I was wrong about, I didn't think Kenyon Green was going to play. Now, we agreed that he should, that he ought to be out there, so I was glad to be wrong about that, and I was glad, more important than me being wrong, I was just glad to see how he looked.
Yeah.
He looked mobile, agile, hostile, if you will.
Where's that from?
I appreciate Kenyon Green's game when he's right. I was glad to be wrong about this, but I did not think he would play, because he was, to me, the clear starter, whether you want to say it's because of his play or just the fact that there's not a lot behind him. He was clearly, to me, the starter at left guard. I could have seen them not playing him, but I'm absolutely glad that they played him and Drew Scruggs 100%.
Remember the Titans, by the way. Anyway,
that's right.
Kenyon Green, I was hopeful that he would play. I was hoping that he would play, but I wasn't certain, simply because he has been the starter. But he had a lot to prove, and they let him get out there and start to prove it right away. So that was good. There was two starters on the offensive line. Drew Scruggs played.
At least.
And he had a little something to prove. At least.
At least two.
Maybe eventually three.
Yeah.
With Blake Fisher.
Yeah, we could do an over-under 2.5 on that one. On offensive linemen starters that were in the game last night. But real quick, let's stay on this for a second with Drew Scruggs and Kenyon Green. I feel like that is probably the most underrated story to come out of last night.
Mm-hmm.
Because – offensive line play is not particularly a sexy thing to talk about, but especially in a game that feels like it's kind of meaningless. This was more of a, you know, like just
exhibition.
Exhibition for show to showcase the Hall of Fame, some of the key brands going into this season. Obviously, the Bears are a legacy brand, but they're going to be actually relevant this year with Caleb Williams and everything that they're doing over there. Mm-hmm. And then the Texans, not so much a legacy brand, but got the juice.
Yeah.
Right? Got the juice. So, like, it was more so about that. But the football stories, okay, I would put the play of Juice Scruggs and Kenyon Green up there with anything. Because, what were some of the biggest questions about the Texans going into this offseason and going into this season?
Yeah.
The interior offensive line. Juice Scruggs, somebody that we're high on but didn't get to play his position because of all of the attrition on the offensive line. Kenyon Green, who had been out of football for the whole year last year so he could get his mind and body right, and even as a rookie, left a lot to be desired. What does that look like now with them in there? I know it's just one preseason game, Texter. Yeah. I know we got to wait until after the third preseason game to have an opinion, but based off of this game, my opinion is I feel a whole lot better about the interior offensive line than I did, say, 24 hours
ago. No, that's a story, and it's a good story for the Texans and Texans fans, because the offensive line, really, if you ask me, are you worried about the offensive line, and it was a yes or no question, I'd say nah. I'm not worried about the offensive line.
Not at all.
That's a development.
Like,
that's a development.
Not at all.
Yeah.
Not at all.
Mm-hmm. And I love that you brought up that. It's not a sexy conversation, but it's one that we need to have, because at the end of the day, those are the guys that are going to be protecting C.J. Stroud.
You're damn right.
And you want him to be able to stay up and be healthy.
Absolutely. Yeah, and we don't have to get into the nitty-gritty of what makes them good offensive linemen, per se. They just need to be good. You know what I mean? And they were good last night.
Not visible.
No
attention.
Well, in this case, in some situations, they would. I mean, I like seeing Kenyon Green maul a guy or two, and Juice Scruggs is just kind of he is the one.
I like him.
He might be their nastiest.
Yeah,
offensive
I like
lineman. He might be their nastiest offensive lineman for sure. So Kenyon Green not playing, I was wrong about that. Glad to be wrong about that, because I was glad to see him play. I thought he should have been playing, and also thought that he played well. Again, mobile, agile, hostile. I liked it. Another thing I was wrong about.
Mm-hmm.
The backup quarterback situation.
All right, glad you brought this up.
Because, listen. I said at the beginning of training camp, just from watching them out there doing drills, that the backup quarterback situation wasn't necessarily dire, but dicey. Mm-hmm. Perhaps a problem. I didn't feel that way watching this game. I know Davis Mills wasn't great, despite what the box score says, and I know Seth Payne picked him apart quite a bit this morning, and he's qualified to do so. But on backup quarterback standards, if we're measuring by that, if we're judging by that, I did not feel bad about what I saw from Davis Mills or Case Keenum.
All right, so I'm glad you brought this up, because I am not as high on what I saw last night as you are. I'm not saying I'm down on it, but Seth Payne mentioned this, and he and I are on the same page, and we're getting a couple of texts. Man, you guys said that, Davis Mills was trash. Well, nobody here is saying that he's trash, but I'm not as high on what I saw. I am high on some aspects of it, though. So Davis Mills was efficient, was good. I think a lot of it has to do, as we said at the start of the show, I think Bobby Slowick is going to be outstanding, and we saw so last night because of, he got that kind of offense in the first quarter and a half, out of Davis Mills and Cam Akers and all these guys that I mentioned earlier, and just go down the line of players that you don't really expect to be, starters per se. So I think it was a Bobby Slowick thing. And here's the other thing. Davis Mills had two plays that I thought were Davis Mills' career in a nutshell. Terrific play over the middle. I believe it was to Cade Stover. I'd have to go back and watch again, but I think it was Cade Stover. Terrific play over the middle. Very next play. A pass that was way off target that probably should have been a pick six. Like Davis Mills as a quarterback, that's what you get. And that's why you don't have confidence in him to start more than one or two games. I will say this, though. His highlight reel play, which, he kind of ducks back.
It was nice.
And dodges that guy.
He's done that before, too, by the way.
Steps up.
That is not the first time we've seen him do that.
And makes the throw. And I'm biased. That was Jerod Johnson. We see them doing that drill literally every day of practice that we've been out there. Where the guy come, remember that day I was saying, well, Jerod Johnson needs to work on his pass rushing skills. That was that drill that they were doing. Where a guy's coming at you, you either step up or step back, move to the side and make that pass. I'm telling you, people.
The one that he had to do twice.
Yeah, he had to do twice.
When we were sitting there.
We see that drill every single day at practice. It's coaching. It's comfort with the offense. It's confidence that what you're doing is right. And, oh, by the way, if you want to get down in the weeds, and I am by no stretch a quarterback whisperer, but, like, even his footwork, his base, as John Harris also, you know, his base, and Clint always talks about, you know, take that back step and go. Like, even that stuff was crisper and sharper. So it was Davis Mills. Give him credit. As a player, I think it's still a mixed bag. I'm not going to say, oh, he was really good. No, I think it's still a mixed bag with him as a player. But the coaching from Bobby Slowick and Jerod Johnson was on full display.
Yeah, I don't think you have to be a quarterback whisperer.
Yeah.
And I don't think you have to be some big film guru. Just somebody that, let's say, watches a lot of football and has watched a lot of Davis Mills, which we all are. We qualify as that. His feet were less choppy.
Yeah.
And here we are, because you brought us here, Lopez. Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, we're quarterback whispers.
Here we go. But it is noticeable, and it matters. Maybe not the sexiest thing to think about, but when you think about what the flaws are in a player or what his shortcomings are, and it's like he's sometimes unsure, makes some spotty or questionable decisions, and his feet would always look choppy in the pocket. Like, settle down, young man. Yeah. Settle down.
And he did.
He looked that way yesterday.
Yeah, so, you know, you want to know why coaching matters. Again, it's kind of in the weeds, but I thought that was on display last night.
Well, I like that you at least made this point. I don't know how much pixie dust, if you will, that Jerod Johnson has for Davis Mills, but I do feel good. I do have a certain comfort level with the backup quarterbacks performing under both this system and the actual,
for all those reasons,
and the actual coaching. So, like the plays that Slowick is calling and the actual position coaching that we know Jerod Johnson is doing behind the scenes makes me feel a lot better about that position. And to their credit, I thought Davis and Case both looked fine. I thought
Case looked better, to be honest.
Yeah, Case looked better.
Yeah.
And so that maybe is something that surprised me. You know, I'm waiting for Case to fall off, but Case might be QB2 still, you know. But I felt good about what the backup quarterback situation is for what it is. Some other things I was wrong about. The defense, I was expecting to see more.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to see more. Now, maybe it's because none of those guys out there are going to actually be factors with the team. But the defense, it surprised me.
Now, that one, I do think, is personnel. One of the questions we had before camp even began, especially me, if you've been listening for any amount of time, I've been worried about the linebacker depth. Well, there was no linebacker depth. I mean, there was no linebacker depth that was on display. I think it's more personnel than anything with defense. Now, that's not a small thing. You need depth. You're going to get linebackers hurt. You're going to get players hurt. I think the defensive front was okay. I thought the nickel backs that were out there were not good. You know, Desmond King had some struggles, and so, like, I think it's just a matter of personnel more.
I didn't feel like they was out there swarming, Lopez. Ain't they supposed to swarm? Isn't this D'Amico Ryans' defense? I know he had to be mad, man.
Oh,
doesn't matter. They wasn't swarming.
Yeah.
Did y'all see any swarming? I ain't see it. I thought the defense was swarm. They did not. And, of course, we mentioned earlier the new kickoff rules. It's another thing I was wrong about.
Mm-hmm.
I thought I was just going to be so excited.
Put a pin in that. It's going to get better.
Whimper.
It's going to get better.
He is John Lopez. I'm Brandon Scott. Chris Santiago rolling along with us on In the Loop. Coming up next, was Bobby Slowick the star of this game? That's next on Sports Radio 610.
We're on the road to Canton, getting you ready for Andre Johnson's Hall of Fame induction on Saturday. Here's In the Loop.
I think you could go with a number of stars of the game. Like, you have a number of choices. You could go with Xavier Hutchinson. Maybe you want to go with Kalen Bullock.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you want to go with Cam Akers. Cam Akers is probably the best candidate here if you wanted to pick a player as, like, the star of last night's game. But Lopez argues that the star of the game last night might have actually been a coach.
Yeah. The savant, Bobby Slowick. I've been calling him that since before he got here. When we were talking about who might be the next offensive coordinator, I'm like, I heard things about this dude. I see what he's doing.
You got to get him a t-shirt or a hat or something.
The savant. By the way, it's a much better look with his hat backwards than forward.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and I think he'll say that. I think he needs to go backwards. Yeah, but
for sure.
Like, so we're watching the game last night, and obviously, you know, I got my phone open, taking notes and all that, and I'm like, if you thought this offense was something last year, buckle up. Like, and there is reason it's just the first preseason game. It's just the Hall of Fame game. Well, let me explain why you should buckle up, and this is a good thing. He showed nothing. It was plain vanilla. I mean, it was beyond plain vanilla. It was vanilla twice, what they were running. And it was crisp. It was efficient. It really couldn't be stopped for the first quarter and a half. And the players with whom he did it, everything was so natural, and you could tell they weren't even thinking, they were just doing. And you were doing it with Davis freaking Mills, who we talked about in the last segment. Like, even his mechanics were noticeably better, but he still, you know, is Davis Mills and had that big throw that could have been a pick six. You're doing it with Davis Mills. You're doing it with Ogunbowale and Cam Akers. Ogunbowale is a special teams player, and he was looking like a good running back. Obviously, we know the story with Cam Akers. Dude's had some Achilles problems, plural, and he looked good. You had at best, what's going to be a fifth string wide receiver in Xavier Hutchinson, just running fluid routes, getting open, cutting crisply, making catches, leading the team in catches. And then you had J.J. Taylor, you know, making some plays. You had a pair of unproven tight ends, one in his first kind of NFL game ever in Cade Stover, and the other one in Tegan Quatoriano, who's been somewhat up and down. They look like this with that on the field. And frankly, they looked really, really good. I think this offense was humming. Forget the final score. That first 15 or 18 minutes of the game, that was Bobby Slowick kind of making a statement. I mean, I'm just barely reaching into the bag.
The things that you want to look at are not the final score, not the box score, not necessarily just the stats, but in terms of this Bobby Slowick conversation, you want to look at the script.
Mm-hmm.
You want to look at the plan. You want to look at just the base level of what you're watching. And all of that looked really good, even in a primitive state, right? Like, it wasn't everything. It's not supposed to be everything in the first game, the Hall of Fame game, an extra preseason game.
Mm-hmm.
But even that looked good. And it gives you a good feeling. When you have a good base, it gives you a good feeling about how things look once you expand from said base. Yeah. And so, to your point, you're doing this with Davis Mills. Oh, what does that play look like if it's C.J. Stroud executing it?
Yeah.
Oh, that play goes to Xavier Hutchinson here on the first play of the game. Oh, what does that look like if it's Stephon Diggs or Nico Collins that actually catches that ball?
Yeah.
You know, like, those sorts of things. And then, of course, you're encouraged by some of the, you know, the backups that did look good,
yeah,
like Xavier Hutchinson, like Cade Stover. You want to think that those types of guys can contribute to you. But the fact that the offensive coordinator and the play caller is able to maximize from there is something that I think is absolutely encouraging. Whether you want to call him the star of the game or not, I mean, you can pick your
man.
You can pick your star, but Bobby Slowick and the offense is something that you should absolutely feel good about, especially given all the hype around it.
Mm-hmm.
It makes you feel like there's a lot to it.
And it was all the backups, and it was just boom, boom, boom. And keep this in mind as well. Everything is now second nature for Bobby Slowick, too. As well as this offense performed last year, it was all new to him. Like, he'd never been the offensive coordinator like that. You know, where it's all his offense. He's impacted offensive game plans and such over the years, but it was all second nature. It was kind of like, and he's not really showing anything. There's an old Milton Berle joke that you're going to have to Google because I'm not going to say it here, but that was like Bobby Slowick pulling a Milton Berle.
So I think.
I didn't mean to throw you off.
Actually, do know it is.
You do know that joke.
So I'm like laughing on the inside. But also, like, the whole The whole offseason, I've been talking about with Bobby Slowik, him being the person that I'm most excited for, not about, because he doesn't play, and I'm not that big of a nerd, right? Like, I'm excited about CJ Stroud. I'm excited about Tank Dell, like the actual players, but excited for Bobby Slowik, man, because think of all the new toys. This is what he was doing with, like you said, the backups.
Yeah.
But what does Bobby Slowik look like?
Just imagine.
What does the season look like? What does his future look like, honestly, when he's able to build off of last year, the success of last year, and add new toys like Stephon Diggs, like a Joe Mixon, who looked pretty healthy the last time we saw him out there running at practice. Wasn't participating in team drills, but looked pretty explosive, looked like he was ready to play football. What does it look like for Bobby Slowik when he's got those types of...
How about just a game plan?
Yeah.
Like last night, that wasn't a game plan. They weren't game planning for the Hall of Fame game. His entire script to start the game was just like plays I want to see. You know, I want to see Davis Mills or whomever in this play. Imagine him with a game plan and C.J. Stroud, Stephon Diggs, and Tank Dell, and Nico Collins, and Dalton Schultz, and Joe Mixon, and all of a sudden, you know, 3 or 4 days to work on a game plan, and that's how comfortable he is.
So you know how we hear about competition? It's like the theme of preseason and training camp. I do wonder how much the coaches compete with each other, like, internally. Like, when you have a lopsided game, at least the way I view this game, it is lopsided in favor of the offense. D'Amico Ryans is incredible. Mm-hmm. All right, so this is not a knock on D'Amico Ryans. But if you just talk about their units, the units that they oversee, that or where they call the plays, the offense 100% outperformed the defense. The defense wasn't able to do the thing that you just described with Bobby Slowik.
Yeah.
Like, just have a game plan, execute the game plan, and just plug and play whoever's out there is able to do it. There was a noticeable difference and drop-off in both the talent and execution from the defense, from what you would expect the defense to look like under D'Amico Ryans, and if the key players are actually playing, versus what the offense was able to do with the Davis Mills and Xavier Hutchinson and Cam Akers and the like, J.J. Taylor and the like. So I do wonder if, you know, like I doubt Bobby Slowik's poking fun at D'Amico Ryans. I wouldn't do that. But I do wonder how competitive they are internally. Like, hey, man, you know, like, they need to get their weight up, you know, like, or how about my unit today? Yeah. How about my guys today? I do wonder, because this, if they were, this would be advantage Bobby between the two today.
I think there's always competitiveness, offense, defense, but I don't think that's necessarily the case. I do think this, D'Amico Ryans is certainly going to use that. He's certainly going to use, hey, you guys have been getting all kinds of flowers. Everybody talk about the defense is controlling most of the training camp. I put it at 60-40. I think that's pretty accurate of how much the defense. Not D'Amico Ryan's going to get their attention with it, you know, especially, and this is third and fourth teamers, but, you know, they got gashed a little bit. Like, I think Troy Aikman mentioned it at some point. Hey, this was the, whatever, second worst rush defense, you know, per carry in the NFL last year, right after like an 11-yard run. That's still way down on the depth chart, but you better be sure that D'Amico's going to pay attention to that and bring it up.
I was just disappointed, man. I mentioned this in the last segment, like I was wrong about the defense. D'Amico Ryans is your head coach.
Yeah.
Swarm is like a thing.
You can't have that defense.
Like, the defense cannot be that underwhelming.
Yeah.
And if I'm upset about it, you better believe that D'Amico Ryans is not satisfied with that product that he saw last night. Like, I am far from the toughest grader or critic. Like, far from it.
Yeah.
D'Amico Ryans, I would imagine, would be a lot closer to it. But I was disappointed. Like, the only guy to stand out is the rookie that I was already excited about, Kalen Bullock. Like, he did things that I was kind of expecting or hoping that he would do.
Yeah.
Where's everybody else at? What do the rest of these backups look like? Man, these dudes better not get hurt, man. This defense better stay healthy. I know that.
I will say, outside, I've been thinking about this ever since we talked about it earlier. Like, who else on the defense would I say, okay, you know, not great, but okay, I see you. I would have to say, and we talked about him before, going into the game, I thought Kurt Heinisch was okay.
Yeah, okay.
Kurt Heinisch was okay.
But about what you...
Like, about what you thought.
I feel like I know what he is now.
Yeah.
You know, like Kurt Heinisch, this is not a knock or praise. This is just I think Kurt Heinisch is a fine rotational interior defensive lineman.
Yeah, that's like I said, I was reaching. But I thought he was okay.
Now, yeah, Seth did mention Marcus Harris, one of the rookies who I did not take note of and have not seen him play NFL football, obviously because he's a rookie. So I wouldn't mind taking a look back at that. Maybe I'm not giving that enough credit, but nondescript would be a way that I would describe this defense. But certainly Bobby Slowick in that offense for sure stood out. They stand out, and I'm excited about watching them in the regular season. Coming up next when we play the hits, let's go to Figgy out there in Canton, Ohio.
How about that?
His stomping grounds, too. He's going to set the scene
life
for us a little bit. Let us know what's happening out there in football heaven. That's next on In the Loop.
We're on the road to Canton, getting you ready for Andre Johnson's Hall of Fame induction on Saturday. Here's In the Loop.
It is In the Loop here with Brandon Scott and John Lopez playing the hits here. The Texans lost last night, but we don't feel no L's. It was a dub for us.
Yeah, man.
We got to check it out. We're going to holler at Figgy pretty soon.
Playing all the hits. These are the hot stories of the day. You're listening to In the Loop with Houston's sports leader, Sports Radio 610.
Obviously the biggest hit, Hall of Fame game last night.
Mm-hmm.
The Texans lost, but again, week one, biggest takeaway, like I said before, man, offense good, defense bad. Feel good about Bobby Slowick. Got to imagine that D'Amico Ryans doesn't feel good about the depth that they have at that position. But I would say, for me, I know you mentioned in the previous segment, star of the game, Bobby Slowick. For me, star of the game, one Cam Akers.
Yeah.
Cam Akers is the one for me. Like, Cam Akers is somebody who I didn't have any real expectation for when he got here. And I would even say has been a bit of an afterthought for me. Because they have so many names, because they have so many pieces, even in that room, there are more interesting things to talk about at the running back position. Obviously, Joe Mixon being here, his health, and then Damian Pierce comeback season. And, of course, you've got some rookies I think people got excited about. Cam Akers is somewhere in the middle there, but he stood out to me as we played the hits here on In the Loop. Cam Akers stood out to me as a playmaker and as somebody who I think has to be an early favorite, to me at least, has to be an early favorite to make the team.
Yeah, man. Look, it was. It didn't feel like a loss. It was. I was as surprised as anybody for Cam Akers, pleasantly so. But we said this yesterday. Let's not get it twisted. This is the Hall of Fame. It's about Andre Johnson. The visuals, the sound, you know, going through both teams lined up, all the Hall of Famers on the introductions was just really, really cool. And our boots on the ground is Figgy Fig. So I wanted to get Figgy on here.
Yeah, let's throw it to Figgy. Figgy is in Canton, Ohio, kind of his stomping grounds. If you're honest about it, Figgy, man, what's good, man? Set the scene. How are you living out there, representing In the Loop, dog?
Man, first of all, yesterday was. I felt like I was in Houston. It was so hot here, man.
Yeah.
It was very hot, but man, it's a lot of Texans fans here, man. We were walking around the Hall of Fame, and man, people representing Andre Johnson, man. It's actually really cool. And the other thing is, I feel like other fans were there, and they were just like, hey, Dre deserved this one.
So no.
It felt good walking around.
It just feels like, and you tell me, like Texans fans are dominating. I know there's a lot of Bears fans there, et cetera, but.
Hey, they travel well, too.
Yeah, I know there's a lot of Bears fans.
It's going to be interesting week, too.
Yeah, but you know, just the scene with Andre, it was so cool. I don't know if you were able to get on the field or just on the press box or whatever, but everything around Andre Johnson is just super cool. What are you seeing?
Yeah, man, I'm just seeing a bunch of fans. I ran into Travis Johnson too, and he told me he I guess he here with Wade Smith. So it's just like everybody is here. It's kind of like a big old family reunion. So it's like we, you know, everybody see each other, and you know, I've seen enough said tailgaters out there. The traveling Texans are here deep, so they're gonna be at Jersey's Sports Grill, which we're gonna be broadcasting from today from 2 to 6. And yeah, man, it's a lot of people out here, man. People, I'm actually proud of Houston.
Yeah,
everybody came out here, man.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that, Figgy, because I was gonna ask if this was more of our timeline being biased toward Houston, having a heavy Houston influence on our timeline, Or is it actually that up there the Texans are properly represented compared to, say, Bears fans, Colts fans for Dwight Freeney and so on and so forth, people that are actually there to see their guys go in? Does it feel comparable? Do the Texans feel like they're matching that energy?
Yeah, not 100% they're matching that energy. And like I said, the Bears, they kind of neck and neck with us, man. They came deep too. But, man, the Houston Texans fans, like, how far it is, like, they came up here and took over, man. I feel like I'm in H-Town, especially with the heat.
Yeah, for sure. Hey, how did you take in the game yesterday? Because I don't know if you was in a press box, on the field, or what, but obviously it looked beautiful in the beginning, and then a monsoon came. take us through your experience yesterday during the game.
Yeah, so we ended up in the press box. So we was watching the game for the press box. But before the game, we was walking around the stadium, man. And believe it or not, a high school team play at that stadium. It's a huge stadium, man. Like, it's beautiful. It's legendary. And, the game was pretty good. I mean, y'all seen the game? It kind of got a little snooze fest in the third quarter.
Yeah.
But I felt like the rain came right on time because I think that was going to be an ugly game in the second half, but it was beautiful out there, man. Right before the tsunami came.
Hey, did you go into the Hall of Fame? Did you get in to see some of the stuff?
So we attempted to go into the Hall of Fame, but it was actually closed off for a private party, which is kind of ridiculous. I'm actually going to go today.
Oh, good.
But it was closed off to, like, the Pro Football Hall of Famers' families and close families and friends. I'm like, damn, we family.
That's right.
Andre Johnson, that's family right there.
That's fam.
Hey, Figgy, you got to let them know who you are, man. Yeah. Look, this is – maybe I should have been there to be your hype man, but this is Figgy Fig, the best in the world at what he do. Okay, so let this man in. Let this man into the – any private party, Figgy Fig would help the vibes. We already know.
I know. Man, you could probably DJ or whatever. Yeah, if I would have seen Travis Johnson or somebody like that, I would have tagged along with him. But, you know, it's but so much I could do. Man, they don't really know me in Cleveland like that.
Oh, come on now. Come on.
Which is crazy.
Hey, Figgy, man, we appreciate you. Looking forward to y'all broadcast. Tell us again where y'all are broadcasting from so we can look forward to that from 2 to 6 today.
Jersey Sports Grill in Canton is right by the stadium. So it's a perfect location. The traveling Texans going to all meet up there. I want to say around 5. So, yeah, if you're a Texans fan, come through.
All right, Vic. Appreciate you, man.
All right, Joe.
All right, man.
This will be an early confession for me. I am jealous of this experience. And I don't think I wasn't clamoring to go. I wasn't like, man, I got to be there for this. I got to do this or whatever. But now in my mind, I'm like, man, that seems pretty damn cool.
Yeah, this is
like the Hall of Fame. I had a friend who took a picture. One of my friends went up there. Mm-hmm. Somebody used to work with at KHOU. Just up there as a fan, not working.
Yeah.
And took a picture of apparently one of J.J. Watt's arm braces. You know that big old bionic thing they used to wear?
Yeah.
One of those is there for whatever reason. I'm not exactly sure. It's in a display case at the Hall of Fame somewhere.
That's hilarious.
And she's like, I wanted to take it. I wanted to steal it.
I'm sure she's not alone.
Obviously, she didn't.
Yeah.
But she wanted. She thought about it.
Yeah.
And I don't blame her.
It was out there.
For her, it's just like, man, these moments, this is so rare. Like, think about it. With Andre Johnson being the first Texan to go into the Hall of Fame, we don't talk enough about what that also means. That also means that we don't have experiences going up there just as pure Texans fans. Maybe you go every year and you're just that big of a football fan and you just check out the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
That's different. Like, going up there to do the Texans coronation thing, it's not just, and I've spoken to this a little bit, but it's worth hammering home. It's not just the first Texan going in. It's not just Andre Johnson, the great, going in. It is Houston Texans fans' first collective experience going to the Hall of Fame and putting on the way Figgy just talked about.
Let me illustrate that. You know, the last time I went to the Hall of Fame, I was working.
When was it?
I was covering an inductee.
Okay, so a cowboy?
1991, last time I went to the Hall of Fame.
That doesn't even count.
when Earl Campbell was inducted.
Oh, man, an Oiler.
Yeah.
I didn't even thought about that.
That's how long it's been. When Earl Campbell was inducted into the Hall of Fame, they sent me over there, and I spent about 3 or 4 days. I got to tag along with – that was a really cool experience. They let me tag along with Earl everywhere he went, and I was writing columns about it. But that's how long it's been, and that's why this is so important for Houston. For Houston, not just for Andre Johnson.
Well, you saying that, first of all, I did not know that.
1991.
And so you saying that really puts into focus the gap,
yeah,
in football excellence in this city. Like the gap in star power. Obviously,
33 years ago.
I mean, the tail end of the Oilers obviously had Steve McNair and the late Steve McNair and Eddie George. And, of course, there were some players on those, you know, final days Oilers teams who eventually became Titans who were great. But there is a wide, huge gap in between Houston pro football greatness.
Yeah.
Between having – like Earl Campbell going to Earl Campbell's Hall of Fame induction in 1991.
Mm-hmm.
And you fast forward, like that's a whole generation ago.
Yeah.
Like you're 30 plus years old from 1991 to now. And Andre Johnson being the Texans' first Hall of Famer. It really illustrates the thirst for football in this city, how bad it got,
yeah,
because of what we lost.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like there's that gap that exists. You know, from passing the torch from the Love You Blue days to the dog days of,
yeah,
you know, the end of the Oilers to not having football at all to the Texans being introduced but being a little bit underwhelming until that next year when they finally go out there and get a dude 100% excited about that. So, yeah, man, a really big moment for, like you said, not just the Texans as a franchise but for the city
and
as
his teammates. You heard him talk about Travis Johnson, Wade Smith. I bet you there's going to be probably 100 former teammates at least that are going to be there for Andre. Just absolutely cool.
You mentioned that the celebration was pretty cool. And walking to midfield between the two teams about to play. Do we have this, this audio? Let's play this. It's always really good and one of the better visuals that you get when the two teams meet up at midfield.
This wide receiver led the league twice in receptions and receiving yards during his 12 seasons with the Houston Texans. He notched more than 14,000 career receiving yards over 14 seasons. Andre Johnson.
One of the best visuals because you got players on each side that don't even know if they can play in the league.
Dude. And
like they're dreaming.
They're just watching like, man.
They're dreaming.
Yeah.
You know, and then here come the Hall of Famers right down between them. That's always a really cool visual. They do a good job with that.
The gap between the greatness of the Hall of Famer,
yeah,
and the guy that's just trying to get on the squad.
Just trying to get on a team.
And just watching them next, yeah, to each other, that dichotomy.
Yeah.
But also, I appreciated, and I've said this before, but this was on Full Focus last night, or in Full Focus last night. The respect and the flowers that this organization gets to get.
Yeah.
After being kind of a doormat, a laughing stock at different points, like Andre Johnson has talked about,
mm-hmm,
like taking it personal, the disrespect that the name of the brand gets or has gotten over the years, especially when he first started playing, but even in the years since,
yeah,
even pretty damn recently, if we're honest about, mm-hmm, it. And so to just make that change, the uniforms, Hall of Fame games, CJ.
Everything's just coming together at the same time.
CJ Stroud, yeah, on the sidelines, Will Anderson Jr. interview, all of that. John Harris getting FaceTime last night. My boy Johnny Harris got FaceTime last night, all of that. One of the things that was real cool for me, Sean Pendergast mentioned this in the morning too, the shot from Andre Johnson, what we just played there, and then D'Amico Ryan's just beaming with pride.
Mm-hmm.
Beaming with pride over
here. Oh, he's just smiling ear to ear, man, the whole time.
Loved it.
Yeah.
Loved it. We did not lose last night. I don't care what y'all say.
No, I didn't feel like that.
I don't care what the box score tells you. I don't care what the final score tells you. 21-17.
Yeah.
Call the game in the third quarter. All of these little romantic moments that we had, sports romantic moments that we had,
mm-hmm,
were 100% wins for all of us as sports fans last night. He's John Lopez. I'm Brandon Scott. Chris Santiago is running things for us behind the glass. That was Figgy Fig joining us live on the spot, on the scene in Canton, Ohio. Coming up next, you might already think that these were some overreactions so far that we've had in the show, but the the biggest overreaction from last night's game, we'll talk about that next on In the Loop.
We're on the road to Canton, getting you ready for Andre Johnson's Hall of Fame induction on Saturday. Here's In the Loop.
It is In the Loop here with Brandon Scott and John Lopez playing the hits here. The Texans lost last night, but we don't feel no L's. It was a dub for us.
Yeah, man.
We got to check it out. We're going to holler at Figgy pretty soon.
Playing all the hits. These are the hot stories of the day. You're listening to In the Loop with Houston's sports leader, Sports Radio 610.
Obviously the biggest hit, Hall of Fame game last night.
Mm-hmm.
The Texans lost, but again, week one, biggest takeaway, like I said before, man, offense good, defense bad, feel good about Bobby Slowick. Got to imagine that D'Amico Ryans doesn't feel good about the depth that they have at that position. But I would say, for me, I know you mentioned in the previous segment, star of the game, Bobby Slowick. For me, star of the game, one Cam Akers.
Yeah.
Cam Akers is the one for me. Like, Cam Akers is somebody who I didn't have any real expectation for when he got here. And I would even say has been a bit of an afterthought for me because they have so many names, because they have so many pieces. Even in that room, there are more interesting things to talk about at the running back position. Obviously, Joe Mixon being here, his health, and then Damian Pierce comeback season. And of course, you've got some rookies I think people got excited about. Cam Akers is somewhere in the middle there, but he stood out to me as we play the hits here on In the Loop. Cam Akers stood out to me as a playmaker and as somebody who I think has to be an early favorite, to me at least, has to be an early favorite to make the team.
Yeah, man. Look, it was. It didn't feel like a loss. It was. I was as surprised as anybody for Cam Akers, pleasantly so. But we said this yesterday. Let's not get it twisted. This is the Hall of Fame. It's about Andre Johnson. The visuals, the sound, you know, going through both teams lined up, all the Hall of Famers on the introductions was just really, really cool. And our boots on the ground is Figgy Fig. So I wanted to get Figgy on here real
quick. Throw it to Figgy. Figgy is in Canton, Ohio, kind of his stomping grounds, if you're honest about it. Figgy, man, what's good, man? Set the scene. How are you living out there representing In the Loop, dog?
Man, first of all, yesterday was – I felt like I was in Houston. It was so hot here, man.
Yeah.
It was very hot. But, man, it's a lot of Texans fans here, man. We were walking around the Hall of Fame, and, man, people representing Andre Johnson, man. It's actually really cool. And the other thing is, I feel like other fans were there, and they were just like, hey, Dre deserved this one.
So no.
It felt good walking around.
It just feels like, and you tell me, like Texans fans are dominating. I know there's a lot of Bears fans there, et cetera, but.
Hey, they travel well, too.
Yeah, I know there's a lot of Bears fans.
It's going to be interesting week, too.
Yeah, but you know, just the scene with Andre, it was so cool. I don't know if you were able to get on the field or just on the press box or whatever, but everything around Andre Johnson, it's just super cool. What are you seeing?
Yeah, man, I'm just seeing a bunch of fans. I ran into Travis Johnson too, and he told me he I guess he here with Wade Smith. So it's just like everybody is here. It's kind of like a big old family reunion. So it's like we, you know, everybody see each other, and you know, I've seen enough said tailgaters out there. The traveling Texans are here deep, so they're gonna be at Jersey's Sports Grill, which we gonna be broadcasting from today from 2 to 6. And yeah, man, it's a lot of people out here, man. People, I'm actually proud of Houston.
Yeah,
everybody came out here, man.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that, Figgy, because I was gonna ask if this was more of our timeline being biased toward Houston, having a heavy Houston influence on our timeline, or is it actually that up there the Texans are properly represented compared to, say, Bears fans, Colts fans for Dwight Freeney and so on and so forth, people that are actually there to see their guys go in. Does it feel comparable? Do the Texans feel like they're matching that energy?
Yeah, not 100% they're matching that energy. And like I said, the Bears, they kind of neck and neck with us, man. They came deep too. But, man, the Houston Texans fans, like, how far it is, like, they came up here and took over, man. I feel like I'm in H now, especially with the heat.
Yeah, for sure. Hey, how did you take in the game yesterday? Because I don't know if you was in a press box, on the field, or what, but obviously it looked beautiful in the beginning, and then a monsoon came. take us through your experience yesterday during the game.
Yeah, so we ended up in the press box. So we was watching the game for the press box. But before the game, we was walking around the stadium, man. And believe it or not, a high school team play at that stadium. It's a huge stadium, man. Like, it's beautiful. It's legendary. And, the game was pretty good. I mean, y'all seen the game? It kind of got a little snooze fest in the third quarter.
Yeah.
But I felt like the rain came right on time because I think that was going to be an ugly game in the second half. But, it was beautiful out there, man, right before the tsunami came.
Hey, did you go into the Hall of Fame? Did you get in to see some of the stuff?
So we attempted to go into the Hall of Fame, but it was actually closed off for a private party, which is kind of ridiculous. I'm actually going to go today.
Oh, good.
But it was closed off to, like, the Pro Football Hall of Famers' families and friends, close families and friends. I'm like, damn, we family.
That's right.
Yeah, that's family right there.
That's fam.
Yeah. Hey, Figgy, you got to let them know who you are, man. Yeah. Look, this is – maybe I should have been there to be your hype man, but this is Figgy Fig, the best in the world at what he do. Okay, so let this man in. Let this man into the – any private party, Figgy Fig would help the vibes. We already know.
I know. Man, you could probably DJ or whatever. Yeah, if I would have seen Travis Johnson or somebody like that, I would have tagged along with him. But, you know, it's but so much I could do. Man, they don't really know me in Cleveland like that.
Oh, come on now. Come on.
Which is crazy.
Hey, Figgy, man, we appreciate you. Looking forward to y'all broadcast. Tell us again where y'all are broadcasting from so we can look forward to that from 2 to 6 today.
Jersey Sports Grill in Canton is right by the stadium. So it's a perfect location. The traveling Texans going to all meet up there. I want to say around 5. So, yeah, if you're a Texans fan, come through.
All right, Vic. Appreciate you, man.
All right, Joe.
All right, man.
This will be an early confession for me. I am jealous of this experience. And I don't think I wasn't clamoring to go. I wasn't like, man, I got to be there for this. I got to do this or whatever. But now in my mind, I'm like, man, that seems pretty damn cool.
Yeah, this is
like the Hall of Fame. I had a friend who took a picture. One of my friends went up there. Mm-hmm. Somebody used to work with at KHOU. Just up there as a fan, not working.
Yeah.
And took a picture of apparently one of J.J. Watt's arm braces. You know that big old bionic thing they used to wear?
Yeah.
One of those is there for whatever reason. I'm not exactly sure. It's in a display case at the Hall of Fame somewhere.
That's hilarious.
And she's like, I wanted to take it. I wanted to steal it.
I'm sure she's not alone.
Obviously, she didn't.
Yeah.
But she wanted. She thought about it.
Yeah.
And I don't blame her.
It was out there.
For her, it's just like, man, these moments, this is so rare. Like, think about it. With Andre Johnson being the first Texan to go into the Hall of Fame, we don't talk enough about what that also means. That also means that we don't have experiences going up there just as pure Texans fans. Maybe you go every year and you're just that big of a football fan and you just check out the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
That's different. Like, going up there to do the Texans coronation thing, it's not just – and I've spoken to this a little bit, but it's worth hammering home. It's not just the first Texan going in. It's not just Andre Johnson, the great, going in. It is Houston Texans fans – first collective experience going to the Hall of Fame and putting on the way Figgy just talked about.
Let me illustrate that. You know, the last time I went to the Hall of Fame, I was working.
When was it?
I was covering an inductee.
Okay, so a cowboy?
1991, last time I went to the Hall of Fame.
That doesn't even count.
When Earl Campbell was inducted.
Oh, man, an Oiler?
Yeah.
I didn't even thought about that.
That's how long it's been. When Earl Campbell was inducted into the Hall of Fame, they sent me over there, and I spent about 3 or 4 days. I got to tag along with – that was a really cool experience. They let me tag along with Earl everywhere he went, and I was writing columns about it. But that's how long it's been, and that's why this is so important for Houston, not just for Andre Johnson.
Well, you saying that, First of all, I did not know that.
1991.
And so you saying that really puts into focus the gap,
yeah,
in football excellence in this city. Like the gap in star power. Obviously,
33 years ago.
I mean, the tail end of the Oilers obviously had Steve McNair and the late Steve McNair and Eddie George. And, of course, there were some players on those, you know, final days Oilers teams who eventually became Titans who were great. But there is a wide, huge gap in between Houston pro football greatness.
Yeah.
Between having like Earl Campbell going to Earl Campbell's Hall of Fame induction in 1991.
Mm-hmm.
And you fast forward, like that's a whole generation ago.
Yeah.
Like you're 30 plus years old from 1991 now. And Andre Johnson being the Texans' first Hall of Famer. It really illustrates the thirst for football in this city, how bad it got,
yeah,
because of what we lost.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like there's that gap that exists, you know, from passing the torch from the Love You Blue days to the dog days of,
yeah,
you know, the end of the Oilers to not having football at all, to the Texans being introduced but being a little bit underwhelming until that next year when they finally go out there and get a dude 100% excited about that. So, yeah, man, a really big moment for, like you said, not just the Texans as a franchise, but for the city
and
as
his teammates. You heard him talk about Travis Johnson, Wade Smith. I bet you there's going to be probably 100 former teammates at least that are going to be there for Andre. Just absolutely cool.
You mentioned that the celebration was pretty cool, and walking to midfield between the two teams about to play. Do we have this? This audio. Let's play this. It's always really good and one of the better visuals that you get when the two teams meet up at midfield.
This wide receiver led the league twice in receptions and receiving yards during his 12 seasons with the Houston Texans. He notched more than 14,000 career receiving yards over 14 seasons. Andre Johnson.
One of the best visuals, because you got players on each side that don't even know if they can play in the league.
Dude. And
like, they're dreaming.
They're just watching, like, man.
They're dreaming.
Yeah.
You know, and then here come the Hall of Famers right down between them. That's always a really cool visual. They do a good job with that.
The gap between the greatness of the Hall of Famer,
yeah,
and the guy that's just trying to get on the squad.
Just trying to get on a team.
And just watching them next, yeah, to each other, that dichotomy.
Yeah.
But also, I appreciate it, and I've said this before, but this was on Full Focus last night, or in Full Focus last night. The respect and the flowers that this organization gets to get.
Yeah.
After being kind of a doormat, a laughing stock at different points, like Andre Johnson has talked about,
mm-hmm,
like taking it personal, the disrespect that the name of the brand gets or has gotten over the years, especially when he first started playing, but even in the years since,
yeah,
even pretty damn recently, if we're honest about, mm-hmm, it. And so to just make that change, the uniforms, Hall of Fame games, CJ,
everything's just coming together at the same time.
CJ Stroud, yeah, on the sidelines, Will Anderson Jr. interview, all of that. John Harris getting FaceTime last night. My boy Johnny Harris got FaceTime last night. All of that. One of the things that was real cool for me, Sean Pendergast mentioned this in the morning too, the shot from Andre Johnson, what we just played there, and then D'Amico Ryan's just beaming with pride.
Mm-hmm.
Beaming with pride over here.
Oh, he's just smiling ear to ear, man, the whole time.
Loved it.
Yeah.
Loved it. We did not lose last night. I don't care what y'all say.
No, I didn't feel like that.
I don't care what the box score tells you. I don't care what the final score tells you. 21-17.
Yeah.
Call the game in the third quarter. All of these little romantic moments that we had, sports romantic moments that we had,
mm-hmm,
were 100% wins for all of us as sports fans last night. He's John Lopez. I'm Brandon Scott. Chris Santiago is running things for us behind the glass. That was Figgy Fig joining us live on the spot, on the scene in Canton, Ohio. Coming up next, you might already think that these were some overreactions so far that we've had in the show, but the biggest overreaction from last night's game, we'll talk about that next on In the Loop.